This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. As the news changes hourly, it seems, all of us are trying to figure out what's going on and how to adjust our behaviors, jobs, finances, and outlook on the future. People who own or work for businesses that are customer-facing are among those trying to come up with creative solutions to at least make some money or serve their communities during this time of need. Today on the show, we're going to talk about how businesses and independent workers are trying to adjust. Let's start with Vermont's tourism industry and how hotels and resorts are changing things up. Sam Von Trapp is the executive vice president of the Trapp Family Lodge and Von Trapp Brewing in Stowe, which is a VPR underwriter. Sam, thank you for adjusting your schedule so many times to join us today.
No problem. We're exactly where we thought we'd be 2 days ago.
What do you mean by that? Just the same as it was 2 days ago? Nothing has changed?
No, everything has changed day by day. But remember, we were originally going to do this interview 2 days ago, and there's a lot of moving parts going on out there. And one thing that that's certainly true these days is everybody understands that that everything is in flux right now.
And yeah, it certainly is. And certainly our broadcast schedule has been in flux over the last couple of days. But what about for you? What is in flux for you and your business?
You know, we were paying attention to this quite early on and adapting and changing protocols within different departments, changing different activities. But as it's gotten more real and more serious for everyone day by day, that's been the case for us here at Trapp Family Lodge as well. So we've, at this point, I would say that probably half to two-thirds of our people, our employees, have been furloughed. We really appreciate the efforts and the quick response from our Vermont state government to make unemployment available for people who have return to work dates. We very much appreciate that they're allowing people to sign up for unemployment immediately. That has been really a great fallback scenario for our employees. But we do still have activity here on the property. We have our guest houses and villas, which are actually owned by the guests. And so we have people who are very happy to be here in an open space where it makes it quite easy for them to social distance themselves. And the one place that there's been a real sense of normalcy and optimism has been out on the ski trails. The skiers and snowshoers have been smiling a lot and really expressing their appreciation that there's something that they can do right now.
You still have snow?
We do still have snow. I actually just skied down to the Sugar House to see what was happening. That's another place with some sense of normalcy, although we're not allowing the public to visit anymore. We're probably going to close in on 400 gallons of syrup today. And the skiing up high is still fantastic. A little patchy down low still.
So you mentioned you have these villas that that people own. I think about 23 of them, right? But you also have, or maybe it's 100 privately owned guest houses and 23 villas?
Yes, 100 guest houses, 23 villas.
And what about your hotel rooms? Are you still taking bookings?
We are, but as you can imagine, it's a very, very small number. You know, we had four rooms in-house last night. The people who are here really, really appreciate that they're able to be here. We're running on a very small staff, as you can imagine, and we're having to have really honest conversations with our employees to make sure that they feel comfortable not being here if that's their choice. We became aware, we're very fortunate to have a lot of people who've been with us for a long time, and we became aware yesterday that, you know, some of these folks might be having to struggle between their loyalty to us and their feelings on how to best take care of themselves. So we've had to close down a lot of our activity offerings just to make sure that none of our people feel any pressure to put themselves in close proximity to anyone.
And Sam, even some of the small details are interesting. It sounds like you've been trying to create different spaces or open doors and stuff so people don't have to push doors open with their hands, just trying to limit the amount of contact that people are making with certain spaces that other people might also be making contact with.
You know, little things really help. I was in Massachusetts and Rhode Island last week doing some beer sales work, and I really noticed from the perspective of being a guest and I really appreciated seeing people cleaning, and I really appreciated every time I didn't have to touch a door handle. So there's a lot of that, the camaraderie. I really liked what you talked about earlier, the shared effervescence. That, to me, is the, you know, one of the few positives in what's going on, is the way that people are banding together and supporting people. So it's nice to see someone's opened a door, and they might stand there and wait for an extra 20, 30 seconds until that person who's coming along can enter and doesn't have to touch that door, or just blocking them open when we can. You know, reminding people, making, you know, making it sort of a little bit, I don't want to say fun, because this is, there's nothing trite here, but the social distancing, being able to sort of smile, it's like a dance where people are trying to maintain that distance from each other.
Yeah.
And being able to do it with a smile on your face, not with a scowl, but at the same time, helping to remind people too, just to stay safe.
In the longer term, and in terms of what you're looking for and hoping for from the state as this not only plays out in the in what's happening now and the closures that are needed, but the ripple effects afterwards, whenever that is, what are your concerns?
Well, this is obviously going to be crushing to any business that deals with hospitality or significant customers. And, you know, here in Vermont, tourism is a massive part of our economy. And I'm sure you've heard different talk about estimates of, you know, how many restaurants could make it through this. And I think it really goes without saying that there will need to be some support from the government to help the hospitality industry get back on its feet after this.
So are there specific things that you're pressing for at the moment that haven't, because a lot has happened, but other things that you'd like to see still happen?
You know, a lot has happened. And again, because the situation is so fluid right now, I think I wouldn't say that we're pressing for anything. It's really, I think we're already hearing the commitment from our state government to really provide that support. And at this point, they know how important it is. So we're really trying to take care of what we're in control of right now, and allow the state government to step in and the federal government to help out later on. And I think it's going to be necessary. If it doesn't happen, I think I heard one estimate. Someone was thinking that 3/4 of restaurants in Vermont wouldn't be able to open again after this if they don't get some sort of support.
Yeah, it's a scary thought and scary to think about all of the people who are affected by this and how we're all going to cope through it, you know, just trying to make it work. Sam Von Trapp is Executive Vice President of the Trapp Family Lodge and Von Trapp Brewing in Stowe, which is a VPR underwriter. Sam, I appreciate your time and your perspective.
Thank you, Jane. Thanks for all the information these past few days.
Yeah, we're going to keep it going, as everyone knows. Beverly is with us from South Burlington. Hi, Beverly. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to say I'm very impressed with what one small business owner whose mailing list I'm on has been doing. The owner of the Burlington Wine Shop downtown is going all out. He's the only person who's working inside his shop right now. He sends a daily email with a special deal, significant discounts, and he's packing up the wines and putting them by the door with just 1 hour when people can come by and pick them up. All the payments are online, and I just really admire everything he's trying to do. And he sends in all the emails what he's done to keep things safe.
Well, Beverly, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate hearing from you and what's keeping you sort of happy and going and how one business owner in your area is making it work. Let's talk now with Liza Bernard. Liza is the co-owner of the Norwich Bookstore, where she's sold books for more than 25 years. And speaking of people who are trying to make it work and maybe either offering deliveries or leaving things outside the building, Liza, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you.
So I understand that the bookstore is closed to the public, but open still by appointment. Is that still true?
Barely still open by appointment. When I first talked to VPR about speaking was several days ago, and as everybody mentioned, things are moving fast. We are here today till 4 and tomorrow 9 to 4 and are letting people in to pay for books one at a time, keeping the social distance that's required to keep people safe. But we're discouraging people from doing that. We're doing most of our business now over the phone or through the web. And then we'll run the books out to somebody's car or leave them on the porch for them to pick up, because we really need to support the distancing to keep the spread as much as possible down.
Are you finding that people are seeking books, are hoping to find something to read to either
Absolutely.
Understand more or take their minds off things, depending on what they want?
Both. People are looking for books to understand. They're also looking books for distraction and entertainment. And now that the kids are all out of school, they're seeking books to both entertain and help educate, keep their kids' minds working along. So books in a time like this, when we are socially distant, books are really important to our community.
Are you finding that you have to offer recommendations? Because one of the joys of going to a bookstore or a library is browsing. And without the ability to do that, people may have something specific they want, but they might also just want you to say, you know, if they're saying, I want fiction that has, you know, great character development and is set in a warm landscape, what can you give me?
Well, two answers to that. One is we do that a lot.
Anyway,
day to day. And we love doing that. That's why we're in this business. We love sharing that love of reading. And so doing it over the phone or doing it by email is definitely just an extension of what we do in the store anyway. And then for the people who would rather just browse on their own, and I have to confess I'm sort of one of them, people can go to our website and go to our staff picks, our website, and also other indie bookstore websites. I want to extend that to my colleagues across the state. Many of us have websites that have a staff pick window, and you can go in and see what Karen is reading or Joe is reading or whatever, just so that you can do some browsing with some guidance from trusted booksellers. So, yes, we're doing a lot of suggestions over the phone. We just emailed off a list of suggested reading group books for a reading group that's hoping to form a remote reading group, and they wanted some suggestions to start with, so we compiled a list of about a dozen titles.
Can you give us a couple of them?
They wanted something with a feminist slant, and one of them was the Mars Room, and one of them was The Awakening, and one of them was Little Women. I mean, they're classics and contemporary fiction. So we're happy to do that. And even though the store will be closed, basically lights out, we will be here, and we're happy to continue to do that to keep the connections going.
We heard from Sam Von Trapp that they furloughed about 2/3 of their workforce. What's happening with people who work at the Norwich Bookstore?
Well, we've basically furloughed everybody. Today and tomorrow, we have 3 people, and our store is big enough that we can be 30 feet apart instead of just the requisite 6. We each have our own workstations, our own telephones are cleaned, we have our own computers, and so we're keeping distance within the store. Starting Monday, it will be 1, perhaps 2 of us at a time, and no public-facing contact. You know, put the books on the porch or run them out to the car, but no person-to-person contact starting then. And you know, things are going to move slower. The supply chain is slower, will be slower, but things will still move.
Well, how long can you do it like this? I mean, I assume that you're doing some business, but presumably not nearly as much as you would on a normal time. So how long do you anticipate you can go like this?
That is the $60,000 question. We have no idea. I mean, none of us know how long the isolation is going to have to continue. None of us know how severe it's going to be. We're just, like everyone else, playing it day by day and doing the best we can to keep people as happy as we can and as healthy as we can.
Well, Liza, I appreciate your perspective and you sharing it with us, and like Sam and our other guests today, being willing to move around for several days to make sure that we could get your perspective on the air. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Liza Bernard is the co-owner of the Norwich Bookstore, where she's sold books for more than 25 years. Let's go to Nils, who's calling in from Duxbury. Hi, Nils. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hey. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just surprised, frankly, that ski resort lodgings are even open at all. So listening to Sam Von Trapp talk about their, albeit diminished, lodging system still being functioning, to me, it makes more sense to do business in a way that will discourage people from leaving home and traveling for fun. I mean, at this point, traveling for fun, it's completely seems to be an oxymoron. And I mean, I love that place, and I live nearby, and I've skied there, and it's an amazing setup. But I, at some level, everybody's got to pitch in, and I'm curious if other lodges are continuing to run, and how doing that is going to impact interstate travel. And interstate travel, as you know, is probably the main method of this thing getting from one point to another. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, Nils, I appreciate that. And you know, I wonder the same thing, but also wonder, where do people go if they need to not be with their family, whether their family members are sick and they are essential workers who need to be somewhere else, or, you know, if there is some essential travel that's still being done, or travel even, you know, that hasn't, that's sort of in progress. And Nils, I don't know if you think about this too, but, you know, what are, at some point, everybody's going to slow down to the point where people are really not moving, but I don't know that we're there yet.
Well, the longer all of us, here's my response to
yeah.
that. Some of us, like me, are taking this really seriously. Now, for me, it's easy because I run my business from home. My shop, office, and home are all in the same property. So as long as I have work coming in, which I do, I pretty much have it made in shape. But other close friends, I have family members that work for companies and for the state of Vermont, for example, and they're able to telecommute and work from home, which is tremendously valuable. And many people can't do that. But for lodges to stay open, I did speak to a friend of mine earlier today about a family matter, and they run a lodge, and they're shutting down for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, Nils, thank you. I appreciate hearing your thoughts on this. We got some sort of lighthearted ones at Madness versus Tweets. I am now prepared to pay 75% of any future earnings toward teacher salaries. Rebby says, remember your favorite servers at restaurants and find a way to support them. Steven in West Brattleboro says, a local chippy is offering takeout. Order and pay over the phone, and someone brings it curbside. I suppose it's better than trying to throw your meal through an open window. And Diane says, stay cool, stay well, escape, create, serve the people. It's really good balloon weather. And Chip says, with little or no money coming in and expenses like rent, wages, and employee health insurance to pay every week, these businesses need our support. Think about purchasing gift certificates. Buy them now for yourself, your family, and friends. Look at what you will spend anyway on gifts for weddings, birthdays, anniversaries, Mother and Father's Days over the year. And buy as many gift certificates as you can right now. It's money you will spend anyway, and it can make a big difference. In most cases, you can do this by phone or online. As we now know, on Tuesday the 17th at 2 p.m., all Vermont restaurants and bars had to close per state order or go to takeout service only. Restaurants are reeling and trying to adapt and trying to figure out how to at least salvage some of the food that will go bad in walk-in fridges and freezers. On Tuesday night, just before what would normally be the dinner rush, I went down to Bristol's Main Street, where the Bobcat Cafe and Brewery was holding its first of what it hopes will be at least several takeout services.
I'm Erin Wheeler, I'm the owner, along with my husband Sanderson, of the Bobcat Cafe and Brewery in Bristol, Vermont.
This is the 17th, and normally you'd be open, maybe doing a brisk business for St. Patrick's Day. So you can't be open as a regular restaurant. What are you doing instead?
Well, we are offering takeout and delivery service, delivery in Bristol and Lincoln only. We have sort of a pared-down menu, and we're asking people to just call in their order and pay over the phone, and we're trying to limit the amount of human contact as much as possible. Really just trying to keep our business somewhat viable through this. It's like really, really, really hard for restaurants, even when it's just normal business. And this is especially just really hard. We had to tell all of our employees the other day that they don't have a job for now. That was like absolutely heartbreaking.
How did you tell them, and what did they say?
So I did it kind of late at night over, like, I created like a big Facebook messenger with everybody on it and wrote a whole long thing. I felt like I could say everything I wanted to if I could write it down. And they're all, I mean, most of them are actually, not most of them, but a lot of them are here right now just helping us without getting paid. Like, they, you know, want the Bobcat to succeed. They are our family. They're our biggest supporters. They're, you know, huge part of our lives.
So in terms of what you're serving now, you have a reduced menu. Is this mainly to try to get out the door all the inventory that would spoil otherwise and try to make a little bit of money, or what's the thinking?
Yes, exactly. It's just we have a whole, you know, walk-ins full of food worth a lot of money. And, yeah, we do want to make money on it, but it's really more about just getting it into people's bellies and not into the trash. And so we are offering a pay it forward payment system so that if anybody who can't afford food can come and eat for free here, like 100%, including and especially laid off hospitality workers, kids that don't have school meals provided when they normally do. I just, like, that's, for me, it seems like the scariest part is the people that are already at risk. Like, right now it's probably okay for them, but, you know, in a couple days, in a couple weeks, like, I don't know. It seems, I feel super fortunate that, you know, I have what I have, and this sucks, but it's not, you know, I'm not starving.
How long can you withstand a closure before you do worry about the business going under?
We can't stand to close a day. Like, we are on such a thin margin where, you know, we have a lot of debt. Like, I have no idea what's going to happen. Like, it's totally up in the air as far as, like, reopening is concerned. Like, it's going to take a lot of support from, I don't know, the government, like, the community. This will hurt us badly. And I'm trying not to think about that.
We're talking at just before 5 on the first day of this. Have you had a lot of orders? What does it feel like today?
We got a big flood of orders right when we opened at 3 o'clock. It got really hectic and chaotic because it's not what we normally do. And then there's like a good lull. There has been a good lull, and now we're kind of waiting maybe for like the dinner push to come. Yeah, I don't know. So far, it's like feels really good to just be doing something and be doing what we sort of normally do. And the past couple of days have been really difficult.
So you said in your postings, you know, anybody who needs food and can't pay for it, no questions asked, just come, especially hospitality workers who, like yours, are out of a job, or kids who need it. You also said we have a lot of toilet paper, so if you need some, just come get some. Is this just normal stocking, not hoarding, just normal TP?
We didn't have a lot. We, when this all happened, we were sort of like on the bottom of our normal like giant case of toilet paper, and then we were like, oh, we better order some. So we got 2 cases. It's a lot. Like, it's just in our basement, and yeah, come get it. Like, they're individually wrapped, super sanitary. Like, not very thick ply, but, you know, get what you get.
How long are you planning to do this for with the food truck?
That's a good question. So after today, we're going to see how this goes, and then, the food truck, we've decided already not to use it. It's just too difficult. We have a whole kitchen. We're all inside.
And you and I are talking outside, because I'm not going in your kitchen.
Exactly. Nobody from the general public is permitted in the restaurant. It's just employees. But yeah, we're going to see how tonight goes and take stock of like the food that we have. And I think we're going to try to do just a totally changing menu every day, depending on like what we have. We've already gotten some offers from farms that they're going to give us, like, you know, bags of carrots. And like, so we'll do, you know, curried carrot soup or something, and probably try to give most of it away.
So timing, how many days do you think?
If they let us, we'll keep going until we, in forever, or, you know, whatever. Until it's over.
Is there anything else you want Vermonters to know, or other people who are in your shoes, or other people who are just feeling kind of lost right now about what to do and how to help. I mean, what are you thinking?
I really keep going back and forth between, like, sort of this pretty acute depression over it and then also this extreme awe. Not only because, like, the whole entire world is going through the same thing, like, the human race is all experiencing this. I find that to be, like, extremely powerful. And also just the outpouring of support for everybody in need, all the people that want to help, and just, you know, it's amazing. So I would say stay hopeful. I don't know. Like, you're not alone. Every single other human being is in it with you.
Thanks, Erin. Good luck. I hope it goes well. I'm going to place my order in a moment, but I'm going to do it by phone, which is what I'm supposed to do.
Thanks so much. It's so nice to meet you.
That was Erin Wheeler, owner of the Bobcat Cafe and Brewery in Bristol. We spoke on Tuesday on their first day of takeout service. The restaurant posted online that the first night was amazing and they're planning to continue for as long as they can. And they still have toilet paper to give away, too. Let's go to Joshua, who's calling in from Walden. Hi, Joshua.
Hello.
What's your situation?
Well, basically, I do drywall and I work for a company on the books. We do commercial and residential, and I've been doing residential housing, and it's just me and one other guy, but unfortunately, we got laid off, and basically, we're going to be sitting home, and I just wanted to call in to let you guys know that, you know, even though I know the numbers are 10 and above that aren't supposed to be around each other, but like I said, it's just me and one other guy, and we're calling it just to try to keep the virus from spreading.
Yeah, Joshua, thank you. I'm appreciative of hearing what's happening in your situation and, yeah, thinking about all of the trades and different ways that people are perhaps losing jobs that were already scheduled, whether or not they could even complete them, that, you know, some people are canceling jobs for all kinds of people, from photographers to contractors and construction workers. Thank you for sharing your thought. Rick is calling in from Waitsfield. Rick, what about you? What are you thinking and doing?
Well, I own a small inn in Mad River Valley, and we have a small pie-only restaurant on Sundays, and we've been able to expand, actually, and offer regular meals, family-style dinners, as cheaply as absolutely possible on a takeout or delivery basis, Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
How's it going?
And, we're starting it next week. We just got it advertised, and we already have about 8 orders. So today was the first day of even advertising. So we're trying to be nimble and meet some need, and it's clearly working.
And do you think you can just augment and get a little extra income, or you think you can get enough to actually sort of stay afloat during this time?
Well, we had a great winter, and so this is somewhat of a pay it forward, like we just heard about, in that we're going to be able to stay open. The inn is closed until Memorial Day at the earliest. So we also wanted to keep a little bit of income going. And so we're really excited about this. We thought we'd expand in the little bit that we can.
And Rick, what should people look for if they're in the Waitsfield area?
They're looking for the Swanson Inn on Route 17, and it's good old family style dinners for 2 or 4 people.
Excellent. Thanks for calling in. Good luck to you. I hope it works well.
Thank you.
Leah at Barrio Bakery in Burlington says, we're staying open as a takeout-only establishment. We've set up an online ordering system for frozen and par-baked goods. We've also set up a donation system in which someone donates money to us through our website, and we make a corresponding amount of baked goods that we deliver to people in need. Everyone wins in this situation. We can stay open and keep our employees employed. People in need get some fresh, quality food, and those who are looking for a way to contribute can through the safety of their own home. Let's hear from Ward in Enosburg Falls, who says, my wife and I are in a lucky group. We're retired with a fixed income of Social Security and pensions. In normal times, we patronize as many local small businesses as usual for groceries, eating out, etc. We've started to purchase gift certificates from the businesses that we use at a rate that maintains normal spending. We'll cash them or give them away later. Others could do the same thing. Lindsay Lighthammer is a wedding planner and head of catering for the Farmhouse Group. Farmhouse Group is a VPR underwriter. Lindsay's also the current president of the Vermont Association of Wedding Professionals, which includes all the various industries that comprise Vermont's wedding industry. And Lindsay's here to talk with us a little bit about her situation and what's happening industry-wide. Thank you so much for making the time for us, Lindsay.
Hi, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Can you talk a little bit about your own personal situation and what you're doing?
Sure. I think that my situation is pretty similar to a lot of the situations with wedding vendors, which, you know, includes DJs, florists, photographers, wedding planners, caterers, and the like. Really what we're seeing and what's been really difficult is the events that we had on the schedule, particularly in these early seasons with our businesses being very heavily seasonal from, you know, May through October. The events that we had now are, you know, considered early season and things like that, but now they're canceling up through, you know, May and probably the beginning of June. So seeing those events and that revenue that we had kind of based our years, our following year on, disappear is obviously really difficult considering, it's a service and we all are all service providers, and seeing those events kind of go away is dwindling the numbers that, you know, the dollar amounts that we're counting on to sustain our livelihoods and things like that. So the best thing that's kind of could come out of all of these cancellations and things like that is really, working with clients to postpone instead of cancel. And that's kind of been the mantra throughout the wedding industry, as of lately is postpone, don't cancel.
And tell me specifically for people who aren't familiar, you know, with how this all works, how that helps the postpone. I mean, obviously postponing means you still got the job someday, but also presumably if people have put down deposits that maybe they don't need their deposit back right away. Is that part of it?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, the postponement definitely helps, our clients with, you know, whom we all care about because we're not in business without our clients, obviously. And then also helps the businesses, like mine also. So it helps in that way that we still have the event. We can still kind of count on those dollars at some point. It might not be in the month that we had, you know, expected, but to still kind of keep it on our calendars, is helpful for us as we kind of financially plan going forward, but then also it's helpful for the clients that are postponing, because the deposit situation has been a little bit of a sticky situation and there's a lot of dialogue surrounding this on when are we, you know, should we be responsible for giving deposits back or not. And postponement helps the client still receive the full value of their expected contract without having to either, you know, completely lose a deposit or, you know, in the business not having to give it back either.
Yeah. And when you think about weddings, for example, you're the president of the Vermont Association of Wedding Professionals. We're talking about wedding planners, caterers, florists, people who are working in design, all kinds of people who are relying on this income to actually mm-hmm. survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a pretty diverse group of businesses for sure that are all involved in weddings and events and that kind of thing. And then also with me being the director of catering and events for the Farmhouse Group, which is like any other restaurant business, has been forced to shut down, forced to lay off their employees and making all these really hard yet necessary decisions. It's been a lot to kind of deal with, obviously, and it's really just been a tragic turn of events for really everybody at large. I think that the only kind of, you know, shining light is that at least, you know, everybody's in it together. And what I've seen from communities and other people helping people and things like that has actually been a shred of bright light through these really dark days.
When you talk to the clients that you were expecting to work with on weddings, What are those conversations like? Because, you know, you said we care about our clients, so you're sort of having personal conversations as well as trying to figure out business-wise what's going to happen.
Yeah, and it's been putting me in kind of a funny place as a planner where, you know, your clients are looking for advice on do they postpone, do they cancel, what do you think? And we all kind of know about, you know, the same amount of information as anybody else, given what we can, you know, ascertain from the media and press conferences and articles and things like that. So it's really like taking it day by day. So I do have clients that call me in a panic, wondering whether they should postpone, and then me trying to exercise my best judgment, you know, I don't know when to postpone or when that cutoff date is. So it's been a little tricky to decipher, like, should my September clients kind of plan on that all of this kind of will have gone through the wash at that point and September events are still, you know, okay, or is there other going to be some kind of like mandate that we need to follow, and should we get a head start by potentially blocking off a date in 2021 and we'll just try to get the same group of vendors and move the date ahead so that all the work and all the money invested so far is not all for nothing. It can just be, you know, it's just the date is changing.
Wow.
So it's been a little tricky navigating that. And then also for clients that are postponing their events on dates where there's a conflict for one or more of their vendors, the vendors, in my opinion, are not necessarily responsible for giving the deposits back, given that in these kinds of businesses, the deposits that we get for the upcoming summer is the money that everybody lives off of all winter. So they may not necessarily have the deposits to give back either. So navigating those kinds of discussions with clients has been a little bit taxing, and it's definitely been kind of a hot topic throughout the industry the last few days for sure.
Well, Lindsay, good luck to you. Thanks for telling us a little bit about your situation, and I will look to the future and hope it works well for you.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. And hopefully, you know, you stay happy and healthy as well. So
thank you. I appreciate that. Lindsay Lighthammer is a wedding planner, and she's been telling us about what it's like to be doing that. She's also current president of the Vermont Association of Wedding Professionals, which includes all of the various industries that work in weddings. Let's go to Karen, who's calling in from Hartford. Hi, Karen. Oh, we don't have Karen yet. We're working on it.
Oh.
Hi, we got you now. Hi, Karen. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
So I own a hypnosis practice in Lebanon, and I work with many clients on many numbers of issues. And one of the things that we're doing is trying to transition into online sessions. So trying to make that pivot using the technology that we have just to decrease exposure and keep the face-to-face time down to a minimum.
How's it going? I mean, is that something that's easy to do? If you're trying to do sort of an online hypnosis session, is there a reason why being face-to-face, you know, is needed or makes it challenging to do it online?
The technology is the biggest piece. Not everybody has the internet accessibility to maintain a session through video conferencing like Zoom.
Yeah.
It is that. Hypnosis, by and large, is talking to people. So any medium that you can have a conversation over, you can do a hypnosis session over, and it's just as effective as being in the same room together. So it comes down to personal preference and what people are most comfortable with.
Well, thank you so much for sharing what you're doing, Karen. I hope it goes well, and I hope all the technological advances are working in your favor. Thanks.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Carmen, who's with us from Burlington. Carmen, tell us about your situation.
Oh, hi. So I am a wedding officiant, and I also am a wedding photographer and a florist. So I'm oftentimes hired for elopements. So one thing that has happened is this has become much more popular. And
the elopements have become more popular?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people are, what my business is seeing is people, well, first of all, they're realizing, there's a lot of people having a realization, like, I love this person and I want to marry them because of this you know, they feel the intensity of this crisis situation and feel so grateful. And then there's also people who are getting deployed as part of the National Guard, not necessarily just in our state, but in the neighboring states, and they can't get marriage licenses in their state, so they're coming here. And then most importantly, people who need health insurance through their partner. And so what's happened is a lot of the clerk's offices around the state are closed, but they will make appointments. Just so if anyone's listening who's wanting to get married, you can still get your license. You just need to call them and make an appointment. So it's been a shift. And the other thing is what I'm finding is couples are having fewer. Everyone was standing 6 feet apart, but the couple, of course, holding hands. And they just had, so they had people Facebooking and all of that. So just, I think right now we have a creative shift in business in our culture. So.
Yeah, well, Carmen, I really appreciate hearing from you. And I think what you're saying there is that people who are having weddings with people, the people are all standing 6 feet apart except for the couple, and that a lot of guests are joining via technology like we were hearing about with online hypnosis as well. I find it really interesting and not entirely surprising, but super interesting to hear that that Carmen is seeing more people eloping, not just those who might have planned a wedding that isn't now happening, but also people who may be realizing in a time of crisis, who they want to be with and what that means to them and what family means. So I really appreciate hearing that, Carmen. Thank you. You know, with so many local businesses effectively shut down, many are wondering how workers are going to pay the bills. That may be you. You might be worrying about how to make rent or mortgage payments. On Tuesday, New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu and other state lawmakers announced a temporary ban on foreclosures and rental evictions in the state. And that includes not just the final stages, but in even initiating those types of procedures. Let's talk now with a landlord who's working through what this means for renters and others in New Hampshire and in Vermont. Andrew Winter is executive director of Twin Pines Housing, a nonprofit affordable housing organization that operates 500 rental units and 50 home ownership units in the Upper Valley on both sides of the Connecticut River. He's also chair of Upper Valley Strong, a group of nonprofits, social service organizations, and other groups working on community resilience. Andrew, thank you very much for talking with us. Appreciate having you here.
Great to be with you, Jane.
So in terms of rental and ownership of a home and people who are saying, I don't know how I'm going to make this work, what's your advice to people and how are you working on this issue as both somebody who's running this resiliency group, but also someone who's executive director of a housing organization?
Yeah, Jane, it's a big challenge. I mean, we're hearing from our tenants on an hourly basis about, you know, folks losing their jobs, folks, you know, finding that instead of working 30 hours at Dunkin' Donuts, they're working 10 hours at Dunkin' Donuts while the business tries to stay open and serve people through a drive-in capacity. And those folks are really worried about how they're going to make their rent this month. And so we are encouraging those tenants to all of our tenants to reach out to us. And in fact, are proactively having our resident service folks and our property management folks actually pick up the phone and call people to say, how are you doing? What do you need? We recognize that this is incredibly trying time for a lot of folks. And you know, for the people that we serve a lot of the folks who work at the restaurants in our region, work in retail, and the like. And so those are the folks as business grinds to a halt, as restaurants grind to a halt, as the hospitality sector grinds to a halt, who are living in our units and are going to be dealing with this in the long term.
You know, I mentioned New Hampshire Governor Sununu's directive to not initiate or finalize or continue the process of evictions and, you know, repossessions. But it's interesting to wonder what might happen at the end of this when people – it's going to be a long tail of recovery. So, you know, when that sort of ends, the idea that people are immediately going to still be able to resume making payments just seems like maybe not a realistic possibility.
Yeah, well, you know, to the extent that people are able to get unemployment benefits in both states without a waiting period, you know, we're encouraging people to do that. We're providing information. Some of the work that we'll be doing on Upper Valley Strong will be focused on that. How do you access those benefits so that you can continue to have money to purchase food, pay rent, pay utilities, and the like? Because, you know, like every other business that you've talked to today, landlords have taxes to pay, have staff to pay, and these are huge concerns, not just, you know, for for-profit landlords, but for nonprofit landlords as well. We are a business, and we do millions of dollars of construction a year. We employ, 28 folks in our office. And so, you know, we need to be able to pay those bills as well.
Let's go to Deb, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Deb. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just putting out the call for people who are looking for work during this time. I work at Cathedral Square, and we have openings for resident assistants, very flexible, daytime, weekends, temporary, because we need fill-in for our staff who've had to leave because of their kids being home from school. And so we have two assisted living places in Williston and in Burlington. And it's really lovely work to work with these elders. And I would just encourage people to reach out to us. And also, I know other senior living facilities are in the same boat. So
can I ask you, Deb, when it comes to working with these populations, do you normally and are you still doing things like fingerprinting and background checks for people who may be working with vulnerable populations, even if you're trying to do it quickly?
Background checks.
Sorry, say that again.
We are doing background checks, and we have the positions, 12 hours of training that is paid. And, we have our memory care, awesome memory care residents in the former V&A respite house out in Williston. And staff are needed there. And then we also have assisted living in Burlington at the on Cherry Street. And it's really, if you've never done that kind of work, it's really rewarding and it's helping people. It's a great team. It's friendly. It's casual.
Well, I'm going to stop you there, Deb, but I appreciate it. Deb calling in from Cathedral Square saying they are hiring, especially as people need to stay home with their children. They have openings for other people to work in their assisted living facilities and other facilities. Deb, thanks for sharing that. One of the spots where you're seeing an opening. Andrew Winter, as chair of Upper Valley Strong, we were talking about housing, but what are the other issues that you want us to be thinking about as we move through this very long-term process?
Sure. And I think your last point about it being a long-term process is really important. I think, so Upper Valley Strong was formed in the aftermath of Tropical Storm Irene as a long-term recovery committee for the region. It stepped up a couple of times since then in terms of working with folks who might have been impacted by small flooding events over the last few years. Last year, we came together when the federal shutdown was in place around food stamps and making sure that food security issues were addressed. And that's one area where we're really going to be spending a lot of time and energy. There's a local group called Willing Hands, which is doing amazing work, working with restaurants, working with Vermont Food Bank and others to try to make sure that we have access to food, not just here in, Hartford, White River Junction, Lebanon, Hanover, but in supporting a number of organizations throughout the Upper Valley on both sides of the river. And so we'll be working with them, trying to make sure that folks have access to food. Beyond that, other issues around housing are critically important. We have a great partner, the Upper Valley Haven, which is our regional housing and homeless shelter provider, they have to be thinking, well, what happens if there is an impact at the shelter and somebody tests positive? What do they do? How do they continue to deliver services? And so we're looking at housing solutions there, which may include, you know, motel rooms. It may include leasing of buildings in an effort to try to address that issue.
Well, there's still a lot to think about and a lot to be done, and I appreciate you bringing those questions into the forefront of our minds. Andrew Winter is chair of Upper Valley Strong, a group of nonprofit social service organizations and other groups working on community resilience in Vermont and New Hampshire. He's also executive director of Twin Pines Housing, a nonprofit affordable housing organization. Andrew, thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thanks, Jane.